From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. A Hillary Clinton administration, should the mass media here in the U.S. have it right, will bring catastrophe unless there's constant agitation waged against it. Thus begins this week's Freedom Rider column at blackagendareport.com by Margaret Kimberly, who was one of several hundred activists who met in Chicago recently for the Right to Exist, Right to Resist conference organized by the International League of People's Struggles. Kimberly adds that the same person who bragged that her party platform was progressive now brags that she's endorsed by Republicans. She also writes that the black misleadership class is playing its usual toadying role. We spoke with her via Skype from New York City Thursday. Margaret Kimberly, welcome back. A pleasure to have you as always.
Thank you, Don.
So let's talk about organizing in the age of Hillary.
Yeah, I was moved to write about this. I attended a conference in Chicago with a group of activists, a couple of hundred people, sponsored by the International League of People's Struggle, the U.S. chapter, on the issue of meeting to discuss the issue of police violence, school closings, privatization through charter schools, and just to fight back against neoliberalism and police violence and racism. And it was very timely. The conference was called, it was the second anniversary of the police killing of Laquan McDonald, a teenager in Chicago, which in and of itself shows you how terrible human rights are in this country, that the police are free to kill teenagers, to kill, well, anybody, three people every single day. And I thought it was very timely. The election is going to be in less than 2 weeks now, and it looks pretty clear that Hillary Clinton is going to win, and win comfortably. And that is problematic for a lot of reasons. But there has been so much focus on Trump and people saying he is fascist. I don't believe he is a fascist. About his racism and misogyny and so forth, that Clinton's victory will appear to be a victory for the rest of us when it is no such thing. She is already, she's saying she's going to lead us to war. This is going to be, I'm calling it the Slick Willie 2, or sometimes the Slick Wilhelmina administration. So we're going to get what we got from her husband. She's already talking about cutting back Social Security or privatizing Social Security, the sort of thing that Republicans dream about, but Democrats are the ones who can actually get done. And there's a need to struggle against her. And so this is why I wrote this column this week, to talk about the blueprint that we have. We don't need to reinvent the wheel. People have already engaged in mass struggle, but just a reminder that that's what we need to do, and especially with a Democratic victory and not a Donald Trump victory, which I think would spur many people automatically to organize. But when there's a Democrat elected, there appears to be less reason to organize when in fact there is just as much reason. So in the age of Hillary, there's going to have to be constant struggle on a variety of issues.
You know, there's some very promising indications along those lines, of course, that include the attendance at that event, which is, I think, probably was a surprise to a lot of folks that it was that well attended. But there were also some serious concerns that I have over sort of this, as soon as she gets in, we're going to organize and put her feet to the fire, or even let's start doing it now, looking at what happened over the last 8 years. What do you think about that?
Well, I think most people who say that don't really mean it. And Democrats fold when there's a Democrat in the White House. When Bill Clinton was president, when Obama, when the waning months of his administration, Well, when Clinton won, nobody even made that claim. Everybody was just jubilant there was a Democratic president. I think there had been three successive huge Republican victories. And I think most progressives were just happy to see a Democrat, although many people had issues with Clinton. And but with Obama, especially, even worse with after Bush, after the stolen election, there was such happiness, and having the first black president, it just silenced people. And it's very, very dangerous when we have Democrats in office, because they don't do much for us. All they do is point at Republicans and say, look how horrible they are. You should, A, support us without question, and B, once we get in, just disappear and shut up, because the response is going to just be, but Trump, in her case. So I am not at all hopeful that this holding of her feet to the fire is going to amount to anything, because it didn't with Obama. If you look at the things he got away with without much complaint, he did not send American troops abroad, but he continued warfare, particularly in the Middle East, destroying Libya. We're now at the brink with Russia over the American plot to overthrow Assad in Syria. The things that the Democrats didn't undo in Congress, they didn't raise the minimum wage. I think they raised it 70 cents those first 2 years when Democrats controlled the House and the Senate. They could have done anything they wanted. But soon, even when that happens, they'll say, well, the Senate, it's not a veto-proof majority. There's always some excuse. But then an election year, they tell you that you must vote for Democrats. And no, we must not vote for Democrats. And I'm urging everyone. I'm voting for Jill Stein and Jammu Baraka. I'm urging people to vote green. I want to destroy the Democratic Party. It is, in fact, a plan of mine to have a bloodless coup and replace the Democrats with a truly progressive party. And we have to start by not voting for them anymore. And this year, it says at Black Agenda Report, we are pointing out that with her, the certainty of her election, those who fear a Republican victory should not fear a Republican victory and should vote for Jill Stein to deprive her of a landslide, because she will use that. If she has a huge victory, she will say she has a mandate. She has a mandate to privatize Social Security. She has a mandate to start a war with Russia. And she needs to have as small a margin as possible. So we're urging people to vote green.
And you know, those who fear a Republican president, of course, need to really consider who is part of the significant part of the constellation around her, and question, in fact, whether or not electing Clinton would be electing a Republican president, in terms of policy, yes, for sure, but also just in terms of the assembled bodies around her.
Oh, sure. She has, Trump has been rejected by all, except rank-and-file Republicans, right, by the way. He's still their guy, and this is creating tensions in the Republican Party, but the Republican establishment do not want him. He has raised only half as much money in campaign funds as Hillary Clinton has. A lot of big Republican donors are not giving at all or giving to her. Democrats are now bragging that Republicans are endorsing her. Colin Powell endorsed her. And all these people that progressives said they couldn't stand are endorsing her. Yes, we are getting a Republican administration. And this is fascism. This is Trump's buffoonery and Trump's even his bigoted statements. That's not fascism. This is fascism. Having one party, in effect, having a Democrat who doesn't really stand by the values that most Democratic voters have, doing business with both sides, having in effect one power in Washington, that is fascism. That's the beginning of fascism, just as we see in the private sector, this endless consolidation. I was joking the other day, pretty soon there's going to be only one corporation. AT&T is gobbling up Time Warner, which You know, they already gobbled up DirecTV or something else, the airlines. There are fewer and fewer airlines. I remember when I was a kid, there were like 20 airlines. Now they're like five. So that's fascism. That is what fascism really is, not somebody that you don't like speaking before a big crowd. So she is, this is a very, very dangerous time, and it is imperative that people realize that and fight against her, because all this talk of Bernie Sanders fighting against her, if he wanted to do that, he would have done it before, or Elizabeth Warren fighting against her, that's a joke too. Elizabeth Warren has been campaigning with her. She's not going to ask her to do anything. She would have sat it out. But so everybody who said, no, we have to stand with, I'm with her, is that the slogan? When she, during the campaign, isn't going to do very much when she's inaugurated either.
You know, this at this particular moment, and it's interesting you brought up AT&T. I remember back in the 60s and 70s, you know, when people talked about fascism coming to the United States, it was like the phone company is going to take over, and everybody chuckled. Mm-hmm. But if you think about the reach of the phone company, quote unquote, or AT&T, now into your house, you used to have the phone, and yeah, they had a monopoly there, but the voices on the other end were whoever you called or called you, and then on your TV and radio, there were, you know, a multiplicity of voices. And now with this grab and the previous grabs by AT&T, it's like almost everything that can come to your ears via electronics is going to be mediated by them. And so,
yeah.
But on the point of fascism, you know, when you have, in essence, a one-party state that has a foreign policy of war and imperialism and a domestic policy of repression, how far exactly does one have to get from that in the 21st century all-pervasive version to be called fascist in comparison to, say, Mussolini's Italy?
Well, it's not very far. I mean, we have... Yeah. I mean, I wish people would study these things and, you know, not make references to things because of imagery that they've seen before, but it isn't very far. We have a country that is waging constant, nonstop war since 2001. We have this great consolidation of wealth, this consolidation of corporate interests, consolidation of the 1% and their support for one political party, for one person. And it's not a stretch, and it's interesting that people will say, Trump was going to be, thank God we have Hillary, now we won't have fascism, when, in fact, we will. So it is not very far away. It's right under our noses, and it's going to, unfortunately, sweep the country. Every Nate Silver, 538, gives her an 84% chance of winning with less than 2 weeks to go. States that generally don't go Democratic, like North Carolina. I don't think Texas is going to flip, as some people say. But it's going to be a very solid victory. It's going to harken back to the days of Reagan and Bush, Bush the Elder. So this is very frightening. People ought to be frightened instead of, you know, heaving a sigh of relief that it's her and not Trump.
You know, on the question of the inevitability of Clinton winning, you have a number of things. One would rest on the accuracy of the polling, and another, of course, that follows from that is the accuracy of the reporting of the polling. Then larger, though, is... you know, this issue that Trump has been bringing up about a rigged election, and I'm not even talking the macro part, well, the media's on her side and this one's on her side, but rather the actual, I vote this way and it gets counted that way. He raised the question that it could be stolen that way, and it's been ridiculed, even by the President of the United States, as ridiculous, and yet the very same people that Democrats in 2000 and 2004 accused of stealing the election are now on Clinton's side, and we saw the theft of the primary election by the Democrats. So when you have, say, all of the secretaries of state and governors and attorneys general of the various states all on one side in an environment where election theft was almost, this is almost a prescription for it, the way the election system is designed here. What do you think about the fact that the election may well be stolen and that we're being prepared for that with the media reporting of where Trump and Clinton stand in relation one to the other in polling?
Well, it's stolen in, lest we forget, Bush stole the election in 2000 or his brother in Florida, by preventing eligible voters from voting. It was a right. very a razor, Gore had a razor thin popular majority, and in Florida they kept several thousand eligible voters from going to the polls.
Right.
So that's how that was rigged, if you will.
Right.
Some electronic voting in some states, there have been some dubious results over the years. So, yes, elections can be rigged that way. In 2004 in Ohio, they kept John Kerry from winning. They just didn't send voting machines to black neighborhoods.
Right.
People had to wait online for hours, and they ensured that Bush would win Ohio. So, and in the case of Bernie Sanders, we now know, thanks to WikiLeaks, how the DNC colluded with, the DNC is supposed to be neutral, but how they colluded with the Clinton campaign to do various things against, to undermine Sanders, to have people, trolls, attacking his followers online, to hide her own corruption with the email server, the fact that she did not use the State Department email server. The emails are showing her doing things that may well have kept her from getting the nomination. So that's a kind of rigging the system. The way our whole election system works, that rich people determine which choices we have and who we get the chance to vote for. So when Trump says it's rigged, I don't know what he means. And they give some ridiculous examples. They apparently keep talking about a number of voting precincts in Philadelphia where Mitt Romney didn't get even one vote. Well, these were all black neighborhoods in Philadelphia, so it's entirely plausible that nobody voted for Mitt Romney in those neighborhoods in Philadelphia. I don't think that's a conspiracy.
Right.
So there's rigging in a lot of ways, in a micro and a macro way. If he means that people's votes aren't going to count, I'm skeptical of that at this point. But of course, this whole anti-Trump drumbeat, which is used to distract us for so much, if Trump says it's rigged or if he says he won't accept the result, I mean, as a practical matter, what does that mean? It does. Right. What is he going to do, take his followers and head to the mountains? I mean, come on,
right.
it doesn't matter. But the big-time rigging is systemic, and that is going to continue from this election and elections to come.
And that, whatever happens November 8th in that sphere, and now when you have, say, this year's Kenneth Blackwell in Ohio deciding, this time we're going to hold back the voting machines in white working class neighborhoods. He's certainly in a position to do that. But whatever happens, this is happening within what Professor Montero calls a crisis of legitimacy for the entire system. So coming out of the election, the legitimacy of both the outcome and of the system itself is only going to intensify. You know, in 2008, we had that crisis that had come down, and people kind of poo-poo it now because the stock market survives and has grown, even as their lives have, you know, become harder and harder and more intolerable. And things were, just to put it in historical perspective for this country, things were so bad that they elected the black guy. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And that has never, ever, 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 ever happened. And I think in 2006, it wasn't even within anyone's conception that it was going to happen anytime soon. Yet it
That's
did.
True.
And what happened was that particular black guy continued the maintenance of the system. He kind of tried to work around the edges to make sure that the status quo survived. Yet, the conditions of people have continued to deteriorate over the past 8 years, and we have seen some unprecedented things, like the rise of Trump under the white working class in rebellion, and of Sanders, pretty much the same phenomenon with some discrete differences, and also all of the people that are in the street. I mean, they were shooting black folks in 2008 and 2010 and 2012 and every year in between, and some folks were in the streets, but you didn't have open rebellion, and now you do. With that pressure cooker at the bottom, and with the divisions that exist, what are the things we should be working on for November 9th and going forward?
Well, progressives need to, those who did not vote for Jill Stein, need to make a pledge to themselves to stop voting for the Democrats. That has got to be one of the first things that happens. There has to be a consensus that we must replace them with a new party. It is an absolute imperative. I think our lives all depend on fighting against war. The propaganda campaign, anti-Russian propaganda campaign, the pro-war campaign, I've never seen anything like it. They are laying the groundwork to make warfare against Russia, another nuclear power, to make that acceptable. And that is the issue that frightens me the most, because literally all our lives are at stake. And that's going to be a priority of mine. But I think those of us who have finally ditched the Democratic Party need to commit ourselves to getting rid of them and to finding a way to talk to people about it. There is so much fear about not voting for the Democrats. We, are pointing out to people they shouldn't worry about Trump because he doesn't have a chance to win, and that is true. But we have to move people to a point where they see they're not losing anything if the Democratic Party disappears. And as they move to the right, as Hillary, is endorsed by Republican after Republican, as the big money people give to her and not to Trump, we have to be able to point out to people, well, this is not a big victory to have a Democratic president who's gotten money from Republicans. So I think that has to be immediate. And we have to help make this system illegitimate, create a crisis, a political crisis, because that's where you get change in this country.
For maybe a century, the tie between the black community in the United States and the rest of the African diaspora and Africa has been, brought up as this is an, we have to look at ourselves as a whole, is the thinking. Mm-hmm. And, whether it's Du Bois or Paul Robeson or Malcolm X or whomever. As the racial divide, quote unquote, manifests in the electorate, and Hillary Clinton stands on top of an awful lot of support from black communities across the country, her role in the recolonization of Africa, and as many, despite what many people believe, with an awful lot of bodies, and they're still falling all over the continent right now, it's not even part of the lexicon. And for those who acknowledge it and know that, like the murder of Gaddafi and the seizure of power in Cote d'Ivoire and these other places enabled the installation of AFRICOM, which is, in fact, the recolonization of Africa, push it aside and say we have more urgent problems than that. And so that's why we have to vote for Hillary Clinton. What is it exactly that's going on in terms of this, what should be at least gross cognitive dissonance that allows people to get from one spot through that to come out saying, well, I have to support Clinton?
Yeah, well, that's why it's so important to organize and to teach people about the linkages. In 2 years ago in Ferguson, when people rebelled after the police killing of young Michael Brown, They received support from Palestinians and advice on how to deal with tear gas. Mm-hmm. Don't, you know, don't put water in your eyes. Use milk. That was a very obvious link of people who live under occupation having solidarity right. with each other.
Right.
I think it's important to, you know, unfortunately, foreign policy has been taken off the table as an issue for discussion. And so, and having a black president only made it worse. Obama could get away with, not only does he lecture black people in the United States, but whenever he went to Africa, he was lecturing Africans
no.
about, you know, not complaining and not blaming colonialism for their problems. So we have to reject that. And I was reading the other day one of Malcolm X's quotes. He said, whatever this, I'm paraphrasing, whatever this system is for, you should be against, and whatever this system is against, you should be for. So, I've often used those words to talk about foreign policy. So AFRICOM is by necessity an evil thing. There was a big article in the New York Times about Somalia, a country that has been destroyed by the United States, which has millions of refugees, starvation, all because of the United States' insistence on choosing the government, on deciding who runs that country on the Horn of Africa. And we have to point out to people that the United States does not ever, ever, ever mean anything good for the rest of the world. But it's as though people have amnesia. You know, Reagan tried to kill Gaddafi and gave up, but the one who got it done was Obama. And not a peep from people who would have said something had a white Republican been, even if a white Democrat had been in office, there would have been at least some pushback about the killing of Gaddafi. And so it's important to talk about these linkages in struggle. It may not seem obvious to say that there's a link between the struggle against gentrification and imperialism, but it's all about the money. And I think when, that's one of the things we discussed at this conference, when you activate people on any issue, that's the best way for people to see the connections. You may not know what monopoly capital means, but when you look at school privatization or gentrification, then you get it. So, and I think also once people become accustomed to questioning in one realm, they're more willing to do it in another. So we empower ourselves and create new allies by encouraging people to oppose this system in a variety of ways.
Margaret Kimberly has a weekly column at blackagendareport.com under the title Freedom Rider, this week's column, Organizing in the Age of Hillary. Thank you very much, Margaret.
Thank you.
That's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.